Hello, this is Brian Scuttle here.
Ronnie Haynes.
Hey, Matt.
We're here to talk about Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Did I think it was up?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Not to them.
Yeah. Well, you know.
New Lucasfilm Limited logo there.
Yeah.
Industry.
Oh, my God, the cheers in the audience.
Yeah.
When that came out.
Uh-huh.
5 years ago.
And then, like, people were, like, taking off clothes by this point. Dancing around.
Yeah. I actually...
And 5 minutes later. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually went to a midnight showing of this back in the day when I wasn't used to staying up that late. I was so exhausted during the first one of this.
It had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just remember this being just being something worth getting excited over.
Oh God, yes. I mean, I think with this we're probably looking at the most anticipated movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think it's safe to say that.
I was wondering what this beginning text could even possibly say.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I was glued to the screen at the beginning text.
Yeah.
I mean, how could he even begin to start it? You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's a little like A New Hope, you know, that it doesn't name any primary characters or anything like that. It just talks a little bit about what the conflict is and
what you're
about to get into, you know, just a taste. You know, it's very much like the beginning scroll text of A New Hope,
which in my opinion. Purpose, I'm sure.
And the classic pan
that
happens in every movie.
Only this time much more spectacular.
Yeah.
And I believe I read one of the original treatments through a CD-ROM I bought when this movie was first coming out, and it had different sorts of things you could look at, sorts of, you know, different Easter eggs, blah blah blah. And it had a little treatment one of the many treatments I'm sure George Lucas wrote. And originally, Naboo was supposed to be surrounded by Death Stars.
Hmm.
Originally, I think that was one of the That was one of the concepts, anyway.
Yeah, I think that was wisely taken out.
Yeah.
I mean,
that just wouldn't have worked.
No,
yeah,
it wouldn't
all
have.
It would have been like.
I know that sounds really broad and hard to believe, but I mean, I promise you that I read that somewhere. Yeah, I know you guys believe me and everything, but I also know exactly how incredible. But now that's now if there was ever an entrance here.
Mm-hmm.
There's the famous Star Wars saying right there.
I'm sure people like wet their pants during that thing.
I remember hearing little, you know, bits of dialogue from people in the audience when TC-14, because of the fact that the robot looks so similar to C-3PO.
Right.
And we've seen some of those in the past and the original trilogy. And so basically just people just trying to soak it in, just soak all of it in.
Mm-hmm.
The,
Viceroy?
Well, no, just the way this whole race of creatures talk.
That caused some controversy.
Yeah,
it caused some controversy.
It didn't quite flow for me.
Yeah, it's one of the things that really doesn't kind of work for me either. I mean, you know,
that line right there is meant to be funny.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing. You know.
Well, a lot of lines in this movie were supposed to be funny. And most people weren't laughing.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we agree right off the bat that this is probably the least of the Star Wars movies? Not to say that it's necessarily...
As far as what?
People liking it.
Just the worst,
yeah, the worst
basically. Worst. Not to put too fine a point on it.
Right.
It's pretty darn close.
What would you put in?
I don't know. You know, I just haven't given it as much thought as you, Brian, I don't think. You know.
Or do you think?
I mean, I read an article when episode 2 came out that said, you know, it was better, but not good better, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I would almost agree with you on that this is probably, arguably, the worst.
Yeah.
of the series.
And that's not to say it's a bad movie, because
right.
I think we do all have a certain degree of respect for this, even despite its shortcomings, which we'll discuss. But just the fact that, you know, it's one of those movies where you really, you think about it and you don't really, you know, some of it just doesn't really work for you.
They must be dead by now. Destroy what's left of them. This is a neat moment, though.
Yeah.
This is a really cool moment.
We see some cool Jedi stuff.
Yes, we do.
Oh, yeah. They did a great job with the Jedi stuff.
Choreography here.
Yeah.
The fight choreography.
Oh, what's the name of the choreographer?
Nick Gilliard.
There you go.
Dave, I'm impressed.
Well, I watched the...
Did you watch the DVD?
Okay.
Good for you.
Yeah, so we're getting...
First time we ever get to see the Jedi push.
Yeah.
By the way, that's... You definitely see some newly established Jedi physics here.
In this movie does take place 30 years previous to A New Hope, which ain't... Hardcore fan will obviously know, but this is really cool.
Yeah.
What he does with the lightsaber here, and the blast doors. I remember getting a really big kick out of this.
Not necessarily.
I'm with you. The accent with the vice running the Trade Federation guys just doesn't really work.
Some of the guys are the way they talk is they kind of make it work, but most of them. I'm not making it work.
It's, you know, it goes back to dialogue, which I'm going to be harping on a lot on.
My
this,
favorite line
but,
right here, Master Destroys. Anyway. Continue.
It really goes back to dialogue. Their dialogue is just not really...
up to snuff.
That strong, you know.
It's just a shame, too, because I mean, the visuals are so strong, and we got
a
strong story happening. I mean, the visuals are really strong, straight across the board.
Oh, yeah, I mean, this is truly one of the best visual effects movies ever made.
It's
like everybody was doing their job, except for George.
And story, too.
Yeah.
Well, George did do part of the job.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, if you think about, and I've said this in defense of this movie... a lot, and I'm sure I mentioned it in episode 2, that, you know, I mean, if you think about it, he's never really had a great ear for dialogue.
Right.
I mean, you know, and one of the things I would always say in defense of this movie is, you take the same level of sophistication of the effects in this, put them with the original Star Wars, you would say have the exact same criticisms about the dialogue.
You would.
Now, and I mean, I just think, I don't know, because the characters that were delivering the dialogue in the original ones seemed just to be a bit more charismatic.
Yeah.
Than here, maybe.
Well,
maybe it was charismatic performances. Maybe. I just don't know. I mean, I know the dialogue in the first one does blow.
I'm not saying all the dialogue in the first movie is horrible.
Right.
I'm just saying you would have the same criticism if you put these effects to that.
People are delivering funny lines here.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean, Harrison Ford delivering funny lines in the original ones, I'm laughing.
But it's Harrison Ford.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, this is Natalie Portman and Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson, for crying out loud.
Yeah. But you know, I don't know. Maybe the dialogue matches up better with the characters.
I think a lot of it has to do with the direction.
Definitely true.
I think part of it, you know, and I hate to say this, but it's like, really, in this, the prequels, what we're seeing is Lucas being so enamored in the visual aspect.
Right.
And sort of, you know, I don't want to say leaving the shortcomings of, in terms of performance,
right.
You know, but just not really, that's not his main
Well, wasn't it Harrison Ford who, in fact, said George Lucas can't direct an actor worth a shit, or was it?
No, what he's well. The
quote, what was the quote?
The quote is, "You can
write this stuff."
Actually,
can't say it.
Yeah. Actually, it's something Peter Travers of Rolling Stones quoted a couple of times. You can type this shit, George, but you can't say it.
Exactly. Well, right. Thank you.
And
that pretty much sums it up.
That basically sums it up. And
because there's some.
I think there are some kind of underrated performances in here.
Yeah, I mean, I do think so, but
overall, the dialogue is kind of flat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah.
And I think it did...
And if it's not the dialogue, it's the delivery.
Yeah.
Right. And
I don't think it's necessarily the actor's fault.
No. And I mean, you can actually tell, like, here... Like Samuel L. Jackson in the second one, you can actually see him try to make the dialogue work.
Yeah.
Here it almost seems like these guys are trying to make the movie work. So you know the fact that dialogue works that doesn't work, that's okay. But you can actually tell him trying to make the dialogue work, and it's still not working. So you can actually see it there. But here you don't see it as much. You just see kind of flat performances, flat delivery. You know.
Ahmad Best, who, you know, despite what people. You know,
we discussed Gungans in episode two, and then my I actually think they're a lot more interesting characters than people are given credit for.
Right.
Yeah, and I can kind of see Trade Federation, the accent with the Trade Federation. There was a lot of controversy with regards to Jar Jar in particular.
Yeah.
You know, sort of reveling in stereotypes that have been rather unacceptable for decades. But, you know, at the same time, I really think, you know, and at the center of this is Ahmad Best, who really gives an enjoyable performance.
Yeah, it's very heartfelt. It's very heartfelt.
Unfortunately, found himself in... the middle of all of this, and when he really did do a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, he's not what's wrong.
No.
No. But, you know, the Gungans, you know, Jar Jar in particular, I mean, what I finally got about this character is that, you know, he's not meant to be, you know, obviously he's not meant to be, you know, the brightest character, but
no.
he's a part of the story for a reason.
Yeah,
and
which we see in episode two.
Yes, and you know it's just the fact of the matter is that he's a childlike character, and you know whatever you want to say about it, whether you know he you know overdoes it or whatever, you know, I think he, again, you know, obviously Ahmad Best is not what the problem is here, but, you know, I just get it. I just get this character now. And I almost, to a certain degree, identify with it.
For me, it's just, I mean, part of what he was there for was for comic relief. For me, he fails at that, you know. That's my biggest problem with that. You know, I mean, if he's going to be there for comic relief,
make him funny.
Yeah, make a couple of statements funny. make me laugh once or twice, and then we can.
I think there are some pretty funny things coming up.
There's some mildly, sometimes
when they're going through.
We just talked over an amazing special effect, though.
Entrance of the Gungan city, which I
and I dig the Gungans. Really do.
This is a well designed city idea. You know, underwater city and stuff like that, and how you get in and out. I mean, that's all brilliant stuff coming.
Yeah,
out, I mean, that's all brilliant stuff.
I was just blown away when I saw this for the first time. I mean, I remember using the word visionary so many times when I was talking about this movie, and it really is. It's very visionary, as a good portion of the Star Wars movies are.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, I mean, you know, right, and I can't believe we've gone 15 minutes into this commentary without mentioning John Williams.
Well,
and absolutely amazing music.
I had to listen to it a couple more times after I first heard you say this, Brian. You mentioned that this is one of John Williams' best scores, but you know, I do agree with you on that now.
Yeah, I really
Second Empire Strikes Back, this really is his best Star Wars score.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's,
that's exactly where I would put
saying a lot. I mean, it's, but you know, I mean, it is. It's, I mean, after Empire, this is his best work. This is his best contribution ever to the series.
Well, I mean, it does share something in common with Empire in that it doesn't rely so much on the themes that were established from the outset.
Right.
It doesn't really rely, you know, here you obviously don't have the Empire theme too much, the Imperial March.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really, you hear the Force theme, but there's a good reason for it in each one. You don't, you kind of hear the Star Wars theme off and on, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically, and I remember, thank you.
Sorry.
And I remember reading
I'm just very proud of my Jar Jar Binks impression, but we'll never mind. Go, I'm sorry, Brian, go ahead.
My Stitch impression is better. But anyway, see, right here, this music, I just remembered loving so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so excited to hear this. And it's so different from anything he does in the original trilogy,
right? Mm-hmm.
In terms of sound. And I remember that's one of the things he said or somebody said about Williams, that what a challenge to basically, he's basically starting from scratch here.
Mm-hmm. Was it obvious to anyone that Qui-Gon Jinn had used a mind trick on Boss Nass just now?
Well, now it is.
Yeah.
I don't know how obvious. I think it was kind of obvious.
It wasn't obvious to me at first, but I mean,
He
does, in fact, use a Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, I don't remember how obvious it was to me, but yeah. I mean, you can. I think he'd sort of pick up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially later in the scene with Watto.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, I mean, that's obviously a. And that's actually a pretty amusing scene. But
yeah.
And apparently there's also a Jedi neck pinch, which I was, Qui-Gon Jinn is about to use on Jar Jar, and I thought, I was like,
this is amazing. This was amazing and pretty scary too.
Yeah, it was.
It's a really big thing.
Yeah.
I guess he's supposed to be like an angelfish type thing, you know, evil, whatever. But
I don't know. I mean, I'm not even
the math.
Try.
I do remember cringing a little bit.
Oh yeah.
At this point, I mean, you know, and
this was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was just. It was just so cool.
There's always a bigger fish.
Wow.
Yes, there is.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty rough.
Okay.
First glimpse of, or no, second glimpse of Darth Sidious. Sorry,
mm-hmm.
We talked over the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his performances are great. I mean, you don't see his face. Ian McDermott. You don't see anything.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way he's talking right there is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I always enjoyed his performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just.
You know,
there's so many actors that use facial expression and eyes, you know, and he never gets to be able to do that. You know, it has to always be just the way he talks. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
Well, not until we see him as Senator Palpatine.
Of course, yeah. Right.
On Coruscant.
But you know, I mean, he's managed to convey death and destruction.
Oh, Max did the Force.
Yeah, Jar Jar's
got.
Let's
think of it.
Jar Jar's got a line coming up that I really like.
This is bad. Okay, I'm going to say. There's a battle in here.
You got a Jar Jar obsession.
Not him. What yet? That's my favorite line.
How do you even think we've done that in trouble?
That's my favorite line of Jar Jar's.
Now that, this is pretty scary right here.
Ed's my favorite line of Jar Jar's because of the fact that it's like, it's a rare case of Jar Jar actually thinking rationally.
So there's your neck pinch you just missed.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I think I remember a few little kids screaming when I first saw this in the theater.
Yeah.
It's a neat moment. This invasion is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And this is the first time you hear the battle droid march.
Actually, second.
It is the second time.
We talked over the first.
Yes,
much
we did.
Like we did the first.
A whole lot of stuff.
So a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
If you want more criticism, or if you want to hear more critical talking about, you know. There's a lot more of pointing out what we really liked about, you know, in episode two, I think, which we, for some reason, did before this one. I can't remember why.
Can you explain that, Ryan?
I can't remember.
I distinctly remember thinking that I wanted to do I felt it was odd that we were doing the second one before we did episode one.
You know, and I can't remember whose idea that was, but
I believe it was yours. But
was it my idea? Now there's actually a really interesting deleted scene that was taken out right there. Like,
oh yeah,
the sub going over a waterfall. I don't know if you guys. Well, I mean, I know Brian's probably seen it, but
I see.
Okay, yeah. I mean, but yeah, I mean, I really liked what they did with. I mean, it's one of the best DVD treatments of a movie I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, I mean this
as far
this
as like extras
very,
and bells and whistles and
this
you know,
this
oh.
was very much yeah, this considered one of the gold standards of the. Medium.
Yeah, it won a couple of awards, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did. But
I mean, you know,
yeah, there's an absolutely brilliant on the fly on the wall documentary
mm-hmm.
about this on the DVD that's just absolutely extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this really it does just sort of get off the ground running. I mean,
yeah,
as far as action, it's pretty much always moving. Excuse me.
Although arguably, episode two is arguably. I mean, I heard Rick McCallum say that arguably episode two is the one with the most action in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the beginning of the Clone Wars. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of the most intense action, anyway. Right. I mean, this is a guy's bum bad. Okay. It was a lot. My impression was a lot better back in '99. I promise you.
Yeah, he's.
I'm a little. My Jar Jar's a little rusty.
I don't even know what to say, man.
What's the guy that plays him?
I don't know.
There are too many.
But I remember.
And already the concept of Amidala having a decoy.
Right.
Yes, which we can plainly see Natalie Portman.
Doesn't necessarily.
Do we know who played the decoy?
Do we, Brian?
We do.
Yeah, do we?
Well, why don't we share? You should know this, Ron, because this is your girl.
What?
Keira Knightley.
Is she?
Yes.
That's Keira Knightley?
Keira Knightley from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Holy shit.
I'm not kidding you.
She's ridiculously hot.
I was blown away when I saw
that's
it.
Insane.
Like, oh, my God.
That's insane.
What? Yes.
That's messed up.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hey, watch this movie a couple more times.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's insane.
Trying to think.
That's actually one of my favorite lines right there when he says, "We need to be those pilots that are doing
I'll take care
of droids."
Yeah,
I'll take care of that. My boy. Which brings up one of the it was one of the documentaries where Lucas was talking to Spielberg because he was like showing him one of the models.
Oh yeah, one of the best
that
moments.
Such a fun moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's saying that you know Jedi cut these things apart like butter, and that's brought to life right here. You know,
yeah,
yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, could you have a more impractical fighting machine.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, obviously, these things are pretty easy to destroy.
And obsolete, yeah.
But right. at the same time, it's like, you know, they do have thousands of them. So right.
And if the numbers, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at first, you know, that's the idea anyways. That right. numbers, mm-hmm. is, numbers are what count.
Right.
And here we have a really great introduction to one of the original characters.
Yep.
I think. Probably one of my favorite introductions.
Right. This is an excellent introduction. This is yes. great
one
idea.
Of the few original characters that we actually see in their mm-hmm. original form.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, Obi-Wan obviously is from the original trilogy, yeah. but right. played by...
You know, Ian R2 almost Gregor. has his own little story arc. Right. In a way.
Yeah, he yeah. really does.
That's a catchphrase George Lucas thought every kid would be saying by the end of the summer, but
no.
And they were still they were still catching on to Eat My Shorts, I believe. Yeah. But
still in awe just to be
okay. Like that's pretty there. Brutal right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a rough
spot. I'm sorry.
My boys can take it down.
Well, I'm sure most of the time they're not being shot at the same time. I mean...
But this is what... I mean, Astrotech droids have never really... You know, I mean, we not. I mean,
you
but
don't
this,
really see too many of them beyond R2.
No.
And...
No, but, I mean, playing this role, you know, yeah. you don't see them... On the outside of ships, most of the time, you know, you see.
Oh, you mean actually doing their job?
Yeah,
as opposed to being like silent comic relief.
But I mean, this dialogue could have been handled a little bit yeah. more. I mean, you know, it's wonderful as far as you know moving the story along is concerned.
Right.
But I mean, and just the concept that you know, Jabba the Hutt, you know, the Hutts.
Right.
In general, are gangsters. I thought that was just really
right.
interesting because that was like obviously never established in.
Well, that's Return of the Jedi stuff. I mean,
I know, but
it really is the idea of them
well,
being gangsters.
Well,
but,
yeah,
no, the idea of Tatooine being
controlled by
the
Hutts.
Right.
Yeah,
no, I mean, no, that's not established. But still, I mean,
and it's just profoundly neat to find something like that out, and, you know, just to like.
Yeah, I mean that was a good moment to establishing different parts of the story right there. I just wish it could have been done a little bit better.
And you know we could have had a little bit better introduction for Darth Maul here.
Right.
But
and admittedly, John Williams goes for the easy cliche,
mm.
you know, dark brass.
No, the two of them.
That was actually a funny line delivered by these weird looking dudes.
Well,
I think my favorite Viceroy line is What was that? You didn't tell him about the missing Jedi. We'll report that to him when we have something to report. Anyway. Yeah. I like how R2, the sounds he makes, almost works as dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's original trilogy.
That's a
stuff.
Given. That's a given, obviously.
I mean,
but that's something I've just always liked.
I mean,
we haven't done any original trilogy, you know, any of the original trilogy yet, and so I mean, I guess.
And I think part of that is because of the fact that I know I personally feel like if we tried to do any of the original trilogy, we'd just be come off as just truly nerdy.
Yeah.
Film.
Not like
how
we already.
How have we not done that yet? I'm just curious.
So I'm simply saying we're not necessarily going to look at it from a more critical standpoint.
No, we're not.
I mean,
and that is definitely one of the reasons.
Who are worse? I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's definitely one of the reasons we haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
This is one of the worst scenes. I'm sorry. It introduces characters to each
worse
other.
Worse than the fireplace?
Huh?
Worse
Nothing's
than the
worse
fireplace.
Nothing's worse than the fireplace. Oh, my.
I mean, I'm still here. So it can't be worse than the fireplace. But it was bad.
Okay.
That's pretty bad. But, no, yeah, that's...
Yeah, it is pretty... No, my vote for worst scene of the movie is coming up.
Oh no! Yeah, any scene involving we'll obviously get to
talk
that.
To no, not necessarily. I'll talk to
That was just one of the worst scenes, I thought. I mean,
it introduces
Padme to Jar Jar and whatever and whatnot, but
the heck? My mute.
So I mean, you can tell. First of all, you can tell what Natalie Portman thought of this. Thought of the idea of, you know, being in the same space with some, you know, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever looked at Natalie Portman when she's doing a scene with quote unquote Jar Jar? I mean, it's just, it's almost painful to watch, I think.
I believe she said that it's like she felt much more relaxed on the second one than she did on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think you basically heard that from Ewan McGregor too.
Yeah. I mean, it was just new for them to have like essentially no set.
You know,
and like
I mean,
half the characters missing.
Exactly. You know? on the second one, as far as the way their characters were written, they weren't as constricted as they were in this one. And
actually, you know, Padme seems to be one of the least, you know, because I even think Jar Jar is a well-developed character for what it's worth. But, you know, Padme seems to be the least developed character in this, one of them, anyway. Here's Dave's favorite line. Favorite Jar Jar line. Isn't that your favorite?
No.
I thought that was like your... I remember you mentioning that was like your favorite Jar Jar.
Sniffing
in my... Icky Goo. I thought that was your favorite... Nah, okay, never mind. There's Dewback.
Yeah.
I thought that was... I don't know. I thought I heard you saying that one time. But,
I laughed at that. That's not funny.
Yeah. And here we have Watto.
One of the most brilliant characters.
Oh, gosh, yes. One of those characters who's not all good, but not all bad either. And it's,
no.
You know, and, you know, I would think, you know, I mean, take, you know, a screenwriter like George Lucas, it would be pretty questionable, you know, writing a character like this, you know, from the standpoint of a screenwriter like George Lucas. But he actually... This is one of his best written characters in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, there was some controversy surrounding Watto, but he is a...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like...
Around Jar Jar, you know.
Jar Jar and the Trade Federation, where it's like, in this case, it was sort of a... People were talking about it as sort of a stereotype on the, you know, money-grubbing Jew.
Yeah.
And it's like... Sorry, it can be more PC there, but I mean, that's basically what people said. And I mean, I can see, again, it's like Jar Jar. I mean, I can see it, but I don't know. I mean, I think it works well. You know, I think people were looking way too much into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Padme Jar Jar introduction.
Yeah. Wow.
Just the way he says, I'm a person and my name is Anakin.
Oh,
are you an angel?
that's
a bit over the top too. Although, I will say, in Jake Lloyd's defense,
Wow, amazing.
Are you sure you want to take that time?
Yeah, no. Are you sure you want to miss that
round? I am positive. For what he was given, I've seen worse.
Right.
He's no Haley Joel Osment.
Right.
Exactly. I think we can all kind of agree on that.
Right. Yeah.
However, you really do get an idea of really get an idea of the character.
You do? I mean...
Well, I mean, okay, he's not as evil. You know, it's like people were saying, you don't see any of the startings of Darth
Vader. Well, it's not that. It's not that.
Like,
I wasn't looking for dark inner turmoil.
I was looking for a good performance.
Yeah, I was...
basically.
I wasn't looking for dark inner turmoil here. I was looking for... you know, just a kid who knew how to act.
Right.
And I told you guys, I rented Whale Rider last night.
Yes.
And I'm like, hello? You know, these kids are out there. You know, and you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't, you would think that a filmmaker as influential as George Lucas with, you know, could, would be able to turn up something like that, but, you know, and so. But,
I mean, we talked over one of my favorite water lines, which is the one where it says Jedi mind tricks don't work on.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that one. That's
yippee.
Yeah, that's.
Ugh. I mean, that was like brilliant animation. I mean,
oh, yes. And
that, I mean, his character looks spectacular. That's just well done. Well done. Mm-hmm.
I believe this. I believe most of this.
Mm. Yeah.
I fell for it.
Mm-hmm.
About quizzes.
Okay,
stop talking. So
quit
it.
But this is Rob and Crunch.
Quit it. All right, sorry.
And there's a couple of times where Jar Jar is just like overboard. He's like, just I'm just done hearing his voice.
Yeah.
Just no more talking. Talk like 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
Right now.
Some people got to that point like a minute and a half into the movie.
And this is meant to be a introduction to Sebulba.
Right.
I mean, and that's. Yeah. Do we have to say anything here?
No, I thought Sebulba's character was pretty cool, though.
Yeah,
it's not Sebulba, it's his introduction.
Right.
That doesn't work.
I don't know. I mean, I
on numerous levels.
it's not the worst introduction, though.
Like, no.
It's an okay introduction.
We just saw the worst introduction in the movie.
Yeah.
We just saw the worst introduction in the movie.
Goodness
gracious. Yeah, he really is trying too hard.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was one of his
kind
trying.
Of tough.
Yeah, it's just bad. That's what I'm saying. It's a shame. Dude. I like this movie. This stuff is bad. Sorry,
This is gonna be like Lord of the Rings again, where it's like one of us just says something so absolutely hysterical, we're laughing for 3 minutes after.
Well, it kills some time.
Yeah,
that's Liam Neeson.
This movie
right
is yes,
that's Liam Neeson with a lightsaber. I mean, how cool is that?
Rob Roy and Schindler's List.
Yes,
and. Michael Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Les Miserables.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, wow, Les Miserables?
Mm-hmm.
The film version.
Yeah, one of the film versions. Mm-hmm. There have been like four or five. Yeah. Natalie Portman, who we really haven't talked too much about, Professional and Beautiful Girls.
Oh, she was awesome in Professional. That was great.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a good movie.
That was an awesome movie.
Yeah,
that was
a great
movie. I mean... Recently in Cold Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Excellent performance in Cold Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
That was basically my favorite portion of the movie was...
I would have to actually agree with that.
Her portion of the movie was probably the most powerful, I think.
This is probably one of the better character introductions that's happening right here.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah, I mean, there are no...
On the level, when you consider what we've just seen, this is like Gandalf riding into Middle-earth and Fellowship of the Ring.
Right, right, right.
Genius.
Yeah. I remember looking at the action figures in the toy store... At one point, probably about 2 weeks before the actual film came out, and standing next to a guy who's with his son looking at the action figures, and they came across the C-3PO figure, and the guy was like, "God, I hope that works." So this is actually a kind of like an old Japanese puppetry. Trick, if I'm not mistaken, the way they quote unquote pulled that off, anyway.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that, I mean, C-3PO's dialogue has always been good.
Well, Anthony Perkins, I think, is a big part of that.
Anthony Perkins?
The deliver.
Anthony Daniels?
You mean? Anthony Daniels.
Thank you.
Sorry. I got my... Thank you for catching that, because...
But yeah, I mean...
yeah, not
is this not,
based.
Like, you know, I want... You know, okay, Coruscant.
Yes.
This seemed to be a bit of an awkward introduction to the planet.
It was an awkward transition.
Yeah, it was. It was very awkward transition.
Which makes this whole scene awkward. You know?
Yeah.
As interesting
and
as this scene is.
Brief,
yeah.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
Of course, Darth Maul's screen time is a bit too brief anyway.
Mm.
I like the way you shot the scene, but there's some great cinematography. But
one of the great dinner table scenes.
Yeah, the sheer Jake Lloyd
just destroys.
I've tried, you know, I've tried to, you know,
that doesn't help either. But that random stupidity in the middle of everything, that is.
Although it does pay off with what
it does. It does.
Right, right, it does.
Don't do that again. Thank you, Liam.
See,
it does pay off there.
Yeah,
almost.
Maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah. Pernilla August, who you know
used to be in a little of Ingmar Bergman films, actually.
Yeah.
The great Swedish director,
and who has a really wonderful. I mean, she has one scene in episode two, but it's.
And she does a really
the
good
most pow-
she,
probably the
she,
most powerful.
She does some really good job developing this character.
Yeah, she does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's just playing perfectly, like the perfect mom who's poor, you got the kid, who's doing everything. Yeah, I mean, that's just perfect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And who wants to touch on before? Who wants to touch on you know the fact that Anakin was conceived by the midichlorians and. I mean,
well, I was kind of waiting until we actually got to the fact that when that was introduced.
I mean, but you know, does anyone else want to touch on this? The idea
we'll
touch on
that later.
Okay.
It's yeah, because I can certainly talk about that a bit.
And you can probably sound a lot more intelligent than I ever would. So,
exactly.
And I doubt it, but you never know.
Well, I mean,
these junk dealers must have a weakness of some kind.
I really am trying to defend Jake Lloyd. And I used to. What am I saying in my review? Wow.
It's just. What? It's just wrong. Sometimes you can't identify it wrong, but it's just wrong. It's wrong. It's a shame, too.
Alright. Brian, what did you say in your review?
Okay. As the unit. Anakin, Lloyd is good, but his performance doesn't transcend being more than an excited kid with a new toy cliche. So maybe I didn't phrase it as much as I thought I did.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, but
I can't believe I used the word transcend in that line.
In some of the special features, they show the casting of Anakin, you know.
Yeah.
And they take you through a couple of choices. And there's one kid who's, like, really amazing. And, you know, he's just an awesome kid, Acura. And they didn't pick him, and I didn't think he had the right look. Obviously, he had more acting skills than Jake Lloyd has. I mean, but I don't think he had the right look for this part. I think actually Jake Lloyd does have kind of the right look.
He does. He looks like a young Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I mean,
he does.
You know, but yeah. So I mean, he
and
he
you
does.
Can kind of see the way the he plays the character.
Right.
Not in terms of quality, but in terms of the personality of the character, really does make sense when you consider in Hayden Christensen's performance in episode 2.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, right. So you can almost see why they picked him.
Yeah.
Almost. But they probably didn't know what they were going to get as the final product, you know. But you never really know, you know. And once you make a choice, you kind of have to deal with it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the ship designs were also interesting.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I mean, they
Doug Chang.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and
well, everybody in Industrial Light and Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And in the documentary, they talked about, you know, the industrial look of the previous one.
Oh yeah,
versus
yeah.
his, you know, sleeker, you know, different look.
Yeah, and
well, this is meant to be a more romantic period in the saga.
Right.
Well, that plus, God, I can't remember where I heard this, and I don't remember whether that was the actual reasoning that they decided on, or whether it was just sort of speculation on somebody's part, but there was sort of, I've heard sort of, you know, the whole idea that it's like, you know, it's like against one of the criticisms people have about this movie. It's like, why is all of this stuff so slick, and why is all of the technology so slick and advanced, and the prequels, whereas in the, you know,
you don't remember Mike saying that
in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have these not primitive, but I mean less advanced technology.
Yeah,
and I think one of the theories that has been mentioned, and I heard, I can't remember where, but was the idea that, you know, once the Empire took out, there was sort of like a middle age,
right.
Mm-hmm.
in the sense of where all of the technology was lost, and they basically kind of had to start from scraps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I mean, that's
and actually, that's not actually,
that's actually a common theme through many sci-fi and fantasy like book series. I know mm-hmm. where you see, you know, in previously there was high advanced technology, whatever, then some type of cataclysmic event happens.
Yeah.
And then everybody switches to sort of a primitive
Matrix!
Sorry.